From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
All right, I'm not going to lie, but this one's out of my league. What do you got for us, Aaron?
This is Been Caught Stealing by Jane's Addiction.
All right.
We're referring to a certain somebody who wants to govern the state and basically steal all of our tax money.
Steal the surplus and, yeah, turn the tax code on its head. That's Aaron Zomers, producer. I'm Pat Kreitlow, humble host. This is Up North News, the third hour for Thursday, October 27th. One more day of this tomorrow from 8 to 11, and then next week, starting Monday, we move to 6 to 8 a.m. Hope you will join us on your local radio station across the Civic Media Network, or you can also catch our live feed at our Facebook page. Just search for Up North News WI on Facebook and through civicmedia.us and through the Civic Media app. And I haven't shilled for that nearly enough, so you can expect a lot of talk about the importance of getting the Civic Media app starting next week as well. Exactly. Thank you. So let's get back to the aforementioned, I guess it's tax plan. Maybe theft plan is a little too strong, but let's talk a bit about what Tim Michaels is proposing right after this important sip of coffee. All righty. There we go. Look, there are, we're glad you're here. But there are also things that if you aren't subscribing to, you really have to. And Dan Schaefer's The Recombobulation Area is one of them. And I want to share a guest column that he published about the possible flat tax plan that could come from Tim Michaels if he's elected governor. And it was put forth by Philip Rocco, an associate professor of political science at Marquette, and Sam Harshner, a visiting assistant professor in history and political science at Marquette. And basically, in a nutshell, no pun intended, Tim Michaels' flat tax plan is a shell game. And Rocco and Harshner use a report from the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau to tell us why. They begin by saying that these elections in November are rightly called pocketbook elections, and Wisconsin is, you know, no exception to that. And we have played the clip a few times from Michael's debate with Governor Tony Evers, where he promises, quote, massive tax reform, end quote. He promises to, quote, get more money in people's pockets, end quote. But that's not a plan. That's not a plan. How do you plan this massive tax reform? Whose pockets are going to get more money? Is that money going to go into the pockets of people who will right away put it back into the local economy because they need to? Or will it go into somebody's, you know, money market account and just stay there and not be put to use? Well, again, because he hasn't provided a lot of details on tax reform, Rocco and Harshner say it hasn't really received much of an analysis. And so while he signals that he's open to a flat income tax and equates it with a tax cut, you have to keep in mind that flattening the tax code without would result in incredibly massive spending cuts that would starve state services, roads, schools, natural resources, and whatnot. So there's a new analysis they looked at from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau that shows that if you were going to enact a flat tax without significant spending cuts, the new flat tax rate would have to be 5.22%. So let's round up and say 5.25%. That there's just one tax bracket. 5.25%, whether you are making, you know, $20,000 a year or $20 million a year. If that were to be the case, a 5.25% flat income tax rate, the Fiscal Bureau projects that 72% of all tax filers, 2.25 million of us, would see taxes go up, while only 2% of filers would see their taxes go down. The ones who benefit most handsomely are filers with annual incomes in excess of $1 million. And again, that's income for that year. They made $1 million or more. By contrast, the largest estimated tax increase would be incurred by filers whose adjusted gross income is between $20,000 and $25,000. It's worth noting again, because I see this in political ads that say things like Evers or Mandela Barnes, you know, favor a 70% tax bracket, which sounds a heck of a lot higher than the 5.25% that Tim Michaels is promoting. But I don't think you can explain often enough to folks that when we're talking about tax brackets, we're talking about the tax on a slice of income above a certain level. So right now, if you know, you're paying basically a 4%, you're in the 4% bracket if you're in the lowest levels. And let's say that you're making $200,000 or more, you're taxed at a higher level, but not on all of it, only on the income that's above $200,000. And once upon a time in this country, in the years after World War II, when we rebuilt the economy, yeah, some of those brackets were sharply higher. But again, they were brackets, taxes on what you made at like the $1 million mark, that the first dollar beyond $1 million in income was taxed at, you know, some much higher rate. That's the kind of tax curve you need, a progressive one that adequately funds services for all, rather than a big giveaway to the ultra rich. Back with Kia Vakil in a minute. You're up north. Music. Are we talking Rocky? Are we talking the Phillies in the World Series? No, we're talking Pennsylvania politics with Kia Vakil. I'm trying to imagine, you know, will it be Doug Mastriano running to the top of the stairs and dancing around because he's just become governor, even though he was at the insurrection? Or will it be the Democrat Josh Shapiro instead? Or all kinds of other unusual things that our friend Kia Vakil has to trace, the Pennsylvania native who is now Courier Newsroom's national correspondent living in L.A., where he has to put up with California politics that we might even make time for because it's so gosh darn goofy. How are you, Kia?
I'm well. Thank you for having me on again, Pat.
How are you feeling about the Phillies?
Feeling good. It's not every year that your baseball team that won only 87 games makes it to the World Series, but that happened this year, and they feel like a team of destiny. So, you know, they're going to run into a buzzsaw in Houston, but we'll see if they can somehow pull it out.
Now, I'm not saying this to pick on you, but you mentioned the number of wins. This is the first time ever that a team that finished third in their division is going to the World Series, because it simply wasn't possible before that. Yeah, it's great. I mean, look, the Packers won the Super Bowl once as a wild card team, so we know it's possible, but does it feel a little weird?
It's weird, and you know, it certainly benefited me as a fan this year, but I would argue that playing 162 game season to then have a third place team get to the World Series is not super great for the sport as a whole, but those are the rules they wanted to put in. And, you know, if a team just plays by those rules and wins, then, you know, what are you going to do?
I'm not a soccer fan by any stretch, but you know, my 3 years of living in a country where, you know, soccer was the big thing, told me that whether you're talking the English Premier League or some others, they play on so many different levels. Yeah, they have a regular season, but they're also playing in like this continental tournament. They're also playing in like this national tournament, all these different, you know, levels, different ways that they can win championships. And I guess I heard that maybe the NBA was thinking about doing something like that. So, I mean, sports is never static. You know, baseball once was 154 games, but I could see that this is interesting, but I think there's going to be more changes yet before all is said and done.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And yeah, the NBA's like mid-season tournament or whatever it's called. Part of this is, I think we're all resistant to change for things that have just been around a long time. I think it's a terrible idea. I think it's a cash grab, but then again, I love basketball, so I don't know that I'm going to complain when I'm actually watching the game.
Exactly. It's so. Both cases. It's totally a cash grab. Totally. It's anything that you know, that you can elevate the sense of drama on TV, which you won't get in the middle of a regular season. But if you're playing for something, yeah, you got something there. So, no, it's a point very well taken, which I guess if you're in the Biden White House, this counts as kind of their midseason tournament because Biden's not on the ballot, but a whole bunch of other folks are in some of these very important races. We've spoken a bit this morning already about the debate between Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman and Republican candidate Dr. Oz for U.S. Senate, and we will come back to it. But I want to start with something else that you tweeted about because it's something that we hear talk about in Wisconsin as well. On the topic of abortion and since the Dobbs decision, there have been Republicans who have said, whether they're running for attorney general or governor or what have you, that if they're elected to higher office, they will have district attorneys removed who refuse to prosecute women under Wisconsin's ancient 1849 abortion ban. And you put up that something similar to that is already happening with the Republican legislature and a duly elected district attorney in your state.
Yeah. So in Pennsylvania, where I grew up, the DA in Philadelphia is Larry Krasner. He has been elected twice by the people of Philadelphia by overwhelming margins. And he is controversial because he is considered to be a, you know, progressive prosecutor and a reformer. And he has made, you know, the Republican legislature in Harrisburg just does not like him. They, you know, he does not really work well with them, it seems like. I do not know the ins and outs of their dynamic, but suffice it to say, they are not fans of his. And they are, as part of their campaign for the midterms, you know, the party, the Republican Party is like, is hammering the crime issue. Philadelphia has seen a huge crime uptick. It is a real problem. You know, people are suffering, you know, and maybe Krasner share some of that blame. Probably everyone involved in leadership in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania share some of that blame. But that also includes the Republican legislature. And rather than, you know, taking action to address the root causes of violence, which include underfunded schools and communities, or prevent people who shouldn't have guns from getting guns, or letting Philadelphia make their own gun laws, they cannot do that right now. Philadelphia leaders cannot make their own gun laws because the state won't allow it. Rather than doing any of those things, they are choosing to try to impeach Larry Krasner, which if you think that sounds crazy, why can state lawmakers impeach a locally elected DA? It is crazy. It's unclear if it's actually particularly legal, but they're going to try to do it for political points.
Sure. And the same has been threatened, not just with district attorneys who are elected, but here in Wisconsin with county sheriffs. If a sheriff said they weren't going to enforce the abortion ban, Republicans would look to have them removed from office as well. Again, as you said, even though they were elected by their own local constituents. And so this is a very Ron DeSantis-like thing that he got started in Florida of saying to the voters, I don't care what you think. It's, you know, it's my way or the highway, which is, you know, downright dictatorial, which is what, you know, we're looking at with the Pennsylvania Republican legislature right now.
Yeah, it's, you know, there was a period of time where Republicans, I mean, for decades, said they were the party of small government, local control, and people bought that. But they're not anymore. They're totalitarians. They're increasingly dictators. If you do not do what they want, if you do not believe what they believe, they will try to remove you from power. They will try to impose their will on you. And that may sound dramatic, but look at Wisconsin, look at Pennsylvania, look at North Carolina, any state where Republicans are in control that is competitive, and even some non-competitive ones, they are absolutely imposing total control and getting disempowering anyone who disagrees with them. You mentioned DeSantis, you know, he's removing attorneys who disagree with him who were elected. I don't remember the man's name, but, and yeah, in Pennsylvania, you're seeing it too. And I think that bodes really, it's a really scary thought about what we're headed for in the next, you know, several years when, you know, if local leaders who are duly elected, who by their constituents, you know, are suddenly, just because they run afoul of the strong man in charge in state capitals, can now be kicked out unconstitutionally or, you know, vaguely constitutionally, that's a problem.
It really is. We're talking to Kia Vakil, Deputy Political Editorial Director of Courier Newsroom, self-described champion of all things Philadelphia. So let's stick with Pennsylvania and talk a bit more about that Senate debate. And I know we're on the same level here and don't really need to continue dwelling on the downright shameful critiques by national media of Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, you know, as he recovers from a stroke. And I see more of the attention turning to that line from Dr. Oz about abortion policy should be, you know, controlled by women, their doctors, and local political leaders. And my goodness, the internets are having a fine time with that. Is that how Pennsylvania news coverage or social media chatter, is that the path it's taken, or are a lot of people still back on Fetterman's performance?
I think it's both. From what I've seen, the local media in Philly, I just checked the Inquirer. Their approach was a little bit, it was fair. It commented on Fetterman's performance as people are allowed to do. But in the context of, you know, they also talked about all these policy things where Oz said X, Y, and Z. I think on social media, the initial, you know, reaction was, whoa, like, he's struggling. And yeah, he was, because he had a stroke 5 months ago. And I don't know if, you know, you have been, a lot of people may not have immediately seen someone in the aftermath of a stroke, but it takes time to rebuild that sort of the verbal acuity. And a debate is not a good format for most people, where you get 15 seconds here, 30 seconds there. But in terms of the chatter online, I mean, I think it's going to be a mix of, yeah, I think those are the two things you mentioned, you know, Fetterman's performance, I'm sure will concern some voters, but Oz's line about abortion is just totalitarian. You're saying you want a local government official to decide if a woman has to give birth and force something out of her body and then be, you know, a parent against her will. I don't think that should be up to the government. Most Pennsylvanians don't think that should be up to the government. And, you know, that line is already in an ad. The Fetterman campaign raised $2 million in less than 24 hours after the debate. I don't think any of us know how it's going to really affect voters, because I mean, you know, you and I are overly dialed in. We're space aliens. And right. So is anyone writing about it or talking about it on Twitter or, you know, any of the other online forums. And so I think it could go either way. People could be really concerned and decide, you know, they're going to vote for Oz. They could find Oz's comment horrible. They could be inspired by Fetterman getting up there on stage and like gritting through it. You know, Pennsylvania is a gritty state. And there's a version where some people are, you know, think that's admirable. I have no idea, and I don't think anyone does.
Your description is spot on, but I would appreciate no more references to gritty when you talk about Pennsylvania, because then I think of the that mascot who looks like a dryer lint or something. You know, it's funny, but well, you guys have a way, don't you, with the mascots?
Yeah. Philly's a wild place. but no, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, there's already hundreds of thousands of votes have been cast. And I think debates matter less than people think.
Yes.
The average voter does not even know there's a debate. They might see, again, they'll see maybe headlines and ads from it, but.
Well, and I think that's why what they're really looking at is the coverage of the debate, which is why I'm spending much more time railing on media coverage of it rather than the substance. When you look at it, the only thing of substance that came out of it was that line from Dr. Oz about abortion. And again, that went into commercials, you know, right away. We've got just a minute here that we're going to get over onto the governor's side, only to ask that. Last I saw, the insurrection participant or adjacent participant, Doug Mastriano, the Republican, is trailing by kind of a healthy margin to Democrat Josh Shapiro. But obviously, 12 days is still an eternity in politics. Is there anything in particular that you might expect of Mastriano to throw any kind of a Hail Mary, throw a grenade to try to shake things up?
I wish I could predict what that man thinks or does, but he is a space alien in a different way than you and I, because he just doesn't engage with media that isn't deeply right wing. I don't think there's anything he can really do at this point. The Republican Governors Association has, I mean, long given up on him. And that race is, you know, whether Shapiro wins by double digits or not, who knows, but it's not competitive right now.
Okay. All right. Got that. Kiev Akil is with us from Courier Newsroom. We're taking a look around the country at things that are going on. And we're going to talk a bit more about some of the other things going on in Iowa and elsewhere. On the other side of this break, remember, you can subscribe to our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter in the top banner and get our newsletter that goes out every evening. Back after this, you're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Where do the Phillies play their games? So I feel what stadium are we in right now, Kia?
They're playing Citizens Bank Park.
Okay.
Which, yeah, it's part of the... Philly has a weird complex where all four arenas are next to each other. All three arenas.
Okay. I'm sorry. I meant the Flag, because isn't this the music they play when the Flyers score a goal?
Oh, yes. They. Oh, God. I don't even know the name of it right now.
See, because they've all become, like you said, PNC Bank Park or whatever. It's just, you know.
It's not a Wells Fargo Center, which is.
Of course. The Wells Fargo Center where Gritty does his thing. We're talking to Kiev Akil, deputy political editor for Courier Newsroom, as we talk about some of the races that he's covering on behalf of all the outlets, including Up North News, across the country. But he's also asking the big question. And the big question he asked in a tweet after putting up the link about Matthew Perry asking about Keanu Reeves, why is Heath Ledger dead, but Reeves still walks among us? Kia's asking the burning question, huh?
I don't know. Matthew Perry's, I guess, on this famously from Friends and very little else, has long struggled with his like addiction issues. And I have empathy for that. I have family members who've dealt with alcoholism. But, you know, he's trying to do some sort of goodwill comeback tour with a book. And I guess in the book, he repeatedly, I guess at least twice, talks about lamenting Keanu Reeves being alive while River Phoenix and... the other person, Heath Ledger, are dead. And it's just such a strange, morbid thing to say. You can wish they're alive without wishing someone else dead. And
right.
Also universally beloved, more than probably other than any other actor other than Tom Hanks. So it's just, it's strange.
Right. And he listed Chris Farley in there as well. And anyway, the update is that Matthew Perry has now issued an apology saying, "I'm actually a big fan of Keanu. I just chose a random name. My mistake. I apologize. I should have used my own name instead," he said in a statement to People magazine. Yes, Matthew Perry, you should have used your own name instead. You know, and said, "Why me? Why am I still here when Chris Farley and Heath Ledger and River Phoenix are gone?" Anyway, we go from asking the big questions to back to some of the big races around the state. Now, you're not following the Iowa Senate race maybe as closely as some of the others, but you're following it a little bit nevertheless. And since it's right next door, I have to ask, it seems like Chuck Grassley, the Republican senator who's been there since 1846, that race is actually getting closer with his Democratic opponent.
Yeah, I mean, if you believe the polls, which is all we have to go off of, it's a competitive race. You know, I think I saw one where Grassley was only up 3, a very reliable poll that showed that. And, you know, it's absolutely possible that he could lose. Do I think it's likely? Probably not. But he is running in the most competitive race in decades, maybe half a century, given how old he is. And, you know, Mike Franken has run a pretty... You know, there's been some issues on his campaign, obviously, but he is running a competitive race. And I think something that's gonna, the only reason that's probably competitive, frankly, is Grassley's age. He's about to be 90 and running for re-election. He's been a public servant since the Eisenhower era. That was a long time ago. That's 40 years before I was
born. There was a 48-star flag at that point. Yeah. Alaska and Hawaii weren't even states.
And so I do think there is some element of Iowa voters who want someone, and Mike Franken isn't exactly young, but he's substantially younger than Chuck Grassley. So I think the age is the main thing in there, because Iowa's not a blue state. You know, it's maybe probably not even a purple state, but
no,
I do think his age is a factor. And if he loses, I do think that will be why.
Well, and we've talked about this, that the key for an election like this will be that enough Republican or Republican-leaning voters look at somebody like a Ron Johnson or a Chuck Grassley or others and go, okay, that's it for you. I mean, frankly, that's how I won my seat in the legislature back in 2006, was people were looking at the longtime Republican incumbent and going, that's enough out of you. Now, granted, after 4 years, they said, that's enough out of me too, but that's sometimes that matters. That, you know, that fatigue level is real. And sometimes it's position based, sometimes it's age based. So I would say we are going to be in for some, if not surprises, you know, so we'll raise a couple of eyebrows come November 8th, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And, you know, Mike Franken has done a pretty good job of creating sort of a permission structure and a pathway for those voters to maybe Republican voters or Republican leaners to kind of jump to him this year. He's not some like crazy, you know, he's not progressive. He's not far left. He's not any of those things. He's running a pretty moderate, you know, campaign while still defending things like abortion rights and democracy. So he's kind of threading the needle he needs to thread to be competitive in Iowa. In the place of California, no, there'd be someone who'd do way better than him. But for Iowa, he's probably the right candidate to maybe win. But yeah, whether it's that or somewhere else, I'm sure we're going to see surprises in November.
Let's look a little bit past the election to what happens if Republicans take back the House and or the Senate and then go up against Joe Biden. And I think the lay person would say, okay, well, gridlock, you know, not much is going to get done. But in fact, because of something that I would personally describe as ridiculous, the debt ceiling, there is actually, you're writing about the real, real potential for economic damage right away in a new Republican-led Congress, if it were to come to that.
Yeah, so the short of it, because the debt ceiling, those words are just boring and make me want to fall asleep. But basically what's happening is the debt ceiling is just the number set by Congress that determines how much the U.S. can borrow in debt to fulfill its financial obligations on programs, if there's a difference between spending and taxation. That number has consistently been lifted over the existence of America without it being an issue. But, you know, over the last decade, Republicans are using it as a political football. They did this in, I think it was 2011 or maybe 2012, where they brought the world to the brink of economic collapse because they held it hostage and refused to increase the debt ceiling unless Democrats gave concessions. That did not work out for them very well last time, but you know, now they're talking about doing it again next year when it expires. And they have said repeatedly, Kevin McCarthy, the top House Republican, has said, the top Republicans fighting to be budget chairman in the House have said they want to use it to extract concessions from Democrats on spending, which effectively means Social Security and Medicare. They want to cut Social Security and Medicare. They want to raise the eligibility age. They want to cut the amount of benefits that certain people get. And if Democrats don't agree to that, they are threatening to blow up the entire global economy by refusing to increase the debt ceiling.
Exactly. It would bring complete chaos to global financial markets for a time. And, you know, Ron Johnson says a lot that he's not here to attack Social Security and Medicare. He wants to save it, but he wants to save it from, overspending. But he won't say what other spending he would be willing to cut to preserve Social Security and Medicare, in part because it seems pretty apparent that if he had his way, all of it would get cut. Social Security, Medicare, and all the other discretionary spending, and frankly, a lot of the automatic spending that is, you know, vital to running the country. But there's no plan.
Precisely. No, Ron Johnson, he can't say, I mean, you know what he truly believes because it comes out in fits and starts in these interviews he does that then get put in ads because they're what his true opinions are deeply unpopular. he does want to cut these programs. He's basically said so and then tried to walk it back because no one wants those things to be cut that lives in the real world and isn't, you know, rich or like hardcore libertarian. But these, you know, yeah, they do not. In Ron Johnson and Kevin McCarthy's ideal world, Social Security and Medicare would not exist. Billionaires would not pay taxes and people would be starving in droves. That is the outcome of the world they want to create. If you take away Social Security and Medicare, seniors are going to fall into poverty at even higher rates than they already do. People are going to die younger. People are going to die earlier. People are going to live in poverty. That is the outcome they're going to try to get. And that's just, there's no two ways about that. And it's, you know, they accuse Democrats of using these things as scare tactics, but they are saying the words.
Right. And what it is it's they're not, perhaps in their heart of hearts, they don't actually want America's elderly to be destitute. What the mindset is, the word I use is benevolence. Under their scenario, the people who are rich are obviously are smarter than you. The people who are rich obviously have a bigger heart. And so it's their benevolence. They're the ones who, like James J. Hill, you know, built the railroads and Carnegie did this and so on. And that they feel that benevolence of the barons, for lack of a better word, is what would be more successful in running the country. And that's, I would reject any charge that that's hyperbole. That is exactly their school of thought on how an economy would work best here, was benevolence.
It is. And it shows they've never read a book about the early 20th century. Maybe they've never read a book, period. That's not Ayn Rand. But, you know, the entire reason the labor movement a century ago was so successful and we had things like the minimum wage and rules about work was because those same barons who made the economy, so to speak, were having people their workers were dying in droves because of how poor working conditions were and how little they got paid and how they were exploited. And that is effectively the world Republicans want. They want to undo the entire New Deal. They want to undo all of, you know, the Great Society and Medicare, like all these programs that made America, that created a middle class. They want to destroy them. And, you know, we've seen Jeff Bezos does not need more money. You know, Diane Hendricks and the Uline family do not need more money. Ron Johnson has already given them giant tax cuts. They do not need more money. Millions and millions of Americans need Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, these people do not make the economy. Working class Wisconsinites, Pennsylvanians, Arizonans, they build the economy. They just get taken advantage of. And instead of making things better, the Republican Party is very clearly stating they want to make things worse.
So back off of the policy positions and back to the electoral politics of having so many people on the ballot and their backers who continue to be election deniers, who are telling lies about the security of our elections and the accuracy of the 2020 results. What is it you're writing about in terms of the deniers, their influence and their activity in these final 2 weeks of campaigning?
Yeah, I mean, something we're trying to do is really just a lot of people do not tune into elections or voting until the last 2 weeks. And most people, journalism is my second career. When I was 22 out of college, I did not pay attention every week of the year. So, you know, a lot of people may not know there are election deniers on their ballot. So part of the job is literally just telling them X, Y, and Z candidates in your state have spread lies and deny 2020. Do you trust them to lead your state? Do you trust them with the economy, with your child's education, with your healthcare? Do you trust this person who tried to overturn your vote 2 years ago? And that's a lot of what I'm doing in the next 2 weeks is just informing people and asking that question, because most Americans, poll after poll, shows they will not trust someone and they would not want to vote for someone who is in a denier, but they may not know that their state legislative candidate is one.
We have covered a lot of issues, but the last one we have to cover is one that doesn't typically come up, but I was surprised to hear Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez mention it, and you reaffirmed it, that it's just a fact that the French fries from In-N-Out are trash. Now, there are no In-N-Outs in Wisconsin, but no. Folks who travel need to know this.
They're so bad. They are, and I, am also a huge fan of French fries. I consume them frequently. My standards are not that high, though. Like, it's hard to make a bad French fry, and In-N-Out has found a way. They're just little thin things that are not crispy, but just like hard and crunchy, but not in a good way. It just tastes like eating stale potatoes or stale crackers, and they're terrible. Their burgers are good. For $4 to get a burger is pretty good, but their fries are absolute trash.
10 seconds, World Series prediction.
Ooh, I got to go Phillies in six, even though that's a homer prediction. Phillies in six.
Phillies in six. That's safe. That's fine. Kiev Akil, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Pat.
All right. We'll talk to you later, and we will wrap up this hour's conversations right after this. You're up north. And you could end with a Walk on the Wild Side. Is that us already? Sometimes these commercial breaks go by so quick. I thought you were just previewing a little Gladys Knight and the Pips for us, but we're actually back live, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Oh, God, I really should look at that clock more often. The other thing is I'm used to seeing, you know, the cherub-like face of Luke Mathers in our screen at some point. And
there he is.
Oh, look at this. Could not be any more last moment. I was just looking at an old SCTV skit on YouTube where Michael McDonald is so busy singing on all these things that he just runs into the studio at the last moment, you know, to go, Peg! On Steely Dan, and then he runs off to do something else. And here's Mathers coming in at the last possible second, slapping on the earphones.
I did the literal, what you just described. I just did the same exact thing. I looked down and saw that it was 10:50, and I was like, I sprinted down the hallway.
And you almost said a bad word there, didn't you? Yep.
No, I sprinted. I didn't say a bad word.
Of course not.
I ran down the hallway.
Glad you're here. If you need to catch your breath for a bit, I'm going to tell folks that Gladys Knight and the Pips on this day in 1973 began a two-week run at the number one spot on the singles charts for that song, Midnight Train to Georgia. And then later, we will hear from Lou Reed, who died on this day in 2013. But that liver transplant just didn't really take after so much abuse, shall we say, over the years, and so we'll hear a little bit of that at the end. But Mr. Mathers is here with us now. He's come in on his roller skates, and he's ready to tell us what else is up and down the civic media empire on this beautiful Thursday.
Yeah, it is a beautiful Thursday. It's been a week here at the Empire. Thank you, Aaron. Yes. Again, though, still gonna say, better metaphor, the rebellion.
We are.
But yeah, we got a very exciting day of shows and content for you. So up next on this fine show is As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bryant. I didn't say it. Did I say fine?
You did. You said fine.
You said fine. Of course you did. Yes. So we're always going to have fine queued up for you here.
See, I'm fumbling a little bit then because I didn't think that I even said fine, but geez. But later... after As Goes Wisconsin, because Kristen did not share anything. I have a feeling Dr. Mike is going to be joining her because it's a Thursday. So that means you can get some life advice, some fantasy football advice. Outside of that, you'll have to tune in to find out. But after Kristen's show here on Bull Falls Radio, you can hear the Chad Holmes show from 2 to 4 p.m. And Chad is going to be joined by Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg at 3:15 this afternoon. So you can hear about what's going on in local government in Wausau with Mayor Rosenberg joining Chad Holmes on the Chad Holmes Show from 2 to 4 p.m.
Yes, Katie actually put up a photo on social media yesterday of her voting, holding up her envelope for her absentee ballot that she was sending back, something that I'm going to be doing during the next hour here. Yes, Dr. Mike is on the lineup here from the just posted As Goes Wisconsin show. Dan Schaefer will be there. When are we giving him just a paycheck? Is he just
don't even suggest
a spotted cow out of the studio fridge now?
He hasn't brought it up yet. He hasn't. You know, once he mentions it, maybe we'll have to start have that conversation. But until then, you just kick that can down the road. But yes, Kristen.
Okay.
See, this is Kristen's problem. She's supposed to tag the stations in the show so that I get a notification when she posts who's going to be on the show. And she didn't do that today. So
I like that we're spanking colleagues.
We're just doing a little public shaming,
chastising them for what they do.
She called into my show earlier this week, telling me that she was calling in and sharing that I was incorrectly counting how many days were left to Election Day because she doesn't count all the way up. She doesn't count Election Day. So she's been saying that the election day is...
It's days till Election Day, right?
But days left to vote is... I include... Because you have until 8 p.m. that day on Election Day to vote. So, I include all of Election Day. Once the polls close and you can't, and you're not standing in line, then you don't... That's when it's done. But until 8 p.m...
If you're saying days left to vote and not saying days until Election Day, then you're totally correct.
She got me on the semantics. So we went back and forth a little bit on dueling tangents with Luke and Brian with a surprise call from Kristen Bry on that.
I wouldn't say she got you on semantics. I say she got you on accuracy and I guess math while semantics. We're at it. But
That's Law and Order. What? What are we doing?
That was the wrong one. Don't worry about it.
Semantics, right? Semantics.
Right.
But then after that, we got the Devil's Advocates, and Dom and Crude have been kind of all around the state. On Monday, they were in Oshkosh. On Tuesday, they did a live show from the Atomic Koi in Fitchburg. Yesterday, Crudy was on campus with Senator Elizabeth Warren visiting the students on campus, along with Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, in their election bids this November. And on Saturday, the former president, Barack Obama, is going to be coming to town, and the Devil's Advocates and the civic media team will be following that event as well. So you're going to want to tune in for special coverage of Barack Obama coming to Milwaukee on Saturday. The event, I believe, is slated to begin at 3:30, with the president expected to be speaking around 5 or 6 p.m. on Saturday.
So a lot going on here.
There is.
And... I didn't catch it at first. It was Joe Zepecki that had to tip me off. The guy who got Ron Johnson to say, once he said, I always tell the truth. And the guy saying, well, what about your promise not to run for a third term? That was Crudy.
Yeah, that was Crudy. When he was in, before covering the Elizabeth Warren event at UW-Madison yesterday, he traveled down to Beloit and got to ask that very, very vital question of Senator Ron Johnson.
He had a few other things to say to Senator Johnson, mostly about how Beloit is right by the border, and he saw a lot of Wisconsin plates at a particular dispensary, and Senator Johnson didn't really like that.
He doesn't have a response. That's a state's issue. Come on, Aaron. That's a state's issue. The senator doesn't have to talk about that one.
Oh, we have had such a discussion on states' rights and states' issues today. This weekend, while that's happening... the Badger basketball team is going to have its annual exhibition this year with the UW-Eau Claire Blue Golds.
Oh, nice. Division
III school. But, of course, being a proud Blue Gold alumni alumnus, whatever it is, graduate, I'm going to be making the trek down to what I suppose is watch the Blue Golds get killed, but it's all for a good cause. It's the funds raised come back to the Eau Claire community for charitable purposes.
Awesome.
But that's going to be fun. I'm pretty sure that'll be my first Badger basketball game in a long time.
Yeah, I got to go to the win over Purdue last year. Earlier this year, last season. March 1st, I believe it was. And we went and Kelsey and I were celebrating our anniversary. We went out for a nice dinner and then saw the Badgers defeat Purdue to get a share of the Big Ten title. So that was a lot of fun.
Very nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, did you catch the women's volleyball for the Badgers taking care of business last night against Nebraska?
I heard that they beat Nebraska.
Somebody
had to have some good news after the Brewers news this morning of David Stearns, getting the boot. Well, allegedly walking away on his own. But
the NBA only has one undefeated team left, too.
That's right. You know what? Shame on me. That didn't even come out till now, but it came in thanks to you. Thank you, Luke. Y'all have a great day. Catch me on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow up north. Otherwise, we'll see you back here one final time for an 8 to 11 show, and then 6 a.m. on Monday. Have a great day.